Good evening, everybody. This is your host, Daedalus, coming to you live from Tampa, Florida. And out on the West Coast, it is King Midas. Hello, King Midas.
Hello, Daedalus. How have you been doing, my son?
I am doing good. Just waiting on, our guest caller to call in. Tonight's
absolutely.
A Chuck Rose.
It's got to be a Chuck Rose for sure. Oh, my.
Oh, yeah. You know, again, we're not revealing the name until the person calls in. Once he calls in, everybody will know who it is. So,
I hope that our server doesn't crash, because this is big time, buddy.
let's just take it by ease and, whatever. We got a confirmation. It's all good. But lately, Charles has been having a meltdown. He's been having an obsession lately with Andrew Breitbart.
That's right.
He went over
the other day, and he's post after post after post. Andrew Breitbart, the racist pig. And he called Janine Garofalo the F word, and it just goes on and on and on.
But here's the thing. Yeah. Charles himself has very vile comments. So look at that Argentinian douchebag, Gus 802, for example, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that guy, I mean, he's always trashing the U.S. He's always railing against big corporations. I mean, he's a very vile character. And then the other day he called the, conservatives inbred alcoholics. I mean, that's pretty, very bigoted of his comments. Yet Charles says, aha, look what they write on other blogs. All he has to do is read his own blog.
Well, I hope Buenos Aires greets him with open arms. I really do.
Yeah. No, quite concur. Quite concur. But, I don't know what his mission is. But anyway, but getting back to Charles, I don't know what's wrong with the guy. I mean, there's different theories. There's your theory where you think you swore he was a communist. There's the he had a mental breakdown theory. Hold on a second, I think. But anyway, what do you call it? So there's different theories on what has happened to Charles Johnson. I think it's a combination of theories. I think he just milked the conservatives because that's who started flocking to his blog. I think he was always a bit of a lefty, but he decided to throw conservatives under the bus when it became cool for Obama,
Oh, absolutely.
So that's what's going on there.
Okay. Well, anyway, how was your week? I haven't talked to you in quite a while.
My week's been good. Like I said, I just had to do some training sessions, things of that nature at work. This week I got to go to a conference. I actually technically got 3 days off, but it's really not off. I have to go to some conference.
That's cool.
Yeah, a conference right around here. But I don't know, man. It's like I said, all I've been doing this week is just paying a lot of attention to Chuck because, this violent attack on Andrew Breitbart, I really don't know. I mean, what does he think he's gaining? Does he think he's going to be relevant again? I mean, it's like when the Anthony Weiner thing went down. I mean, he had egg on his face, and yet he said, I would defend Anthony Weiner all over again,
Well, the only thing I can make of it is he's got so few hits on his website that he should want to stir up the caca. So as to increase his ratings. It's never going to happen. It's going to take 10 years of him digging out of his hole to get to where he was. He did it all himself.
Right.
No doubt about it. He had a good thing going. He had a cash cow. He had money rolling in the bank, and he did it all to himself. So I have no sympathy for the guy. Sorry. No sympathy.
Yeah,
no. No.
No, I like I said, I just think, I really don't know what to make of this guy. I mean, every time I think he can't sink lower, he just sinks lower. He's just gone nuts. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's nothing he does that doesn't amaze me, if you know what I'm trying to say. I mean, he just times and times again, what do you call it, just keeps thinking lower, like he'll attack this one, then he'll attack. Now it's Andrew Breitbart. Before it was Ron Paul. By the way, you see now on the blog they're allowed to praise Ron Paul.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, they've been praising Ron Paul now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt. It makes no sense at all.
You know what I'm saying? So, I mean... What has gotten your eye on off LGF lately? Like, what have you seen from there that's really whacked you out?
Wait. Run that by me again.
What have you seen recently on LGF that's really, you know, gotten your attention, that really, you know, has whacked you out?
Well, it is this incessant obsession with Andrew Breitbart and what he says and this and that. And I guess Andrew was going to just beat the living hell out of some guy for getting in his face and anybody didn't. And Chucky's like, oh, look at that. Oh. It just proves me he's a violent or teabagger. Yeah, well, the guy was defending himself. I mean, I'm sorry.
The new rage over at Chucky's site is now, what's it called, that Occupy Wall Street group.
Yeah. How about those people that got arrested on the Brooklyn Bridge? You see that group of sycophants? You saw that, didn't you?
No, I didn't see those guys.
No, there were these anti oil company, you know, typical progressives. Well, we're going to create a fuss, and we're going to fight the man and everything. And 200 of them were on the Brooklyn Bridge. This is this week, and they all got arrested.
Guys,
all right,
guys. I could pretty much got to say our special guest is calling. Let me play an intro for this man. This man is a legend. One and only Andrew Breitbart. Hello, Andrew Breitbart.
Hey, how are you guys? I mean, you're paying attention to the same stuff I'm paying attention to, Occupy Wall Street. Yeah, I'm having fun with that, but I just saw one of the most menacing videos I've ever seen in my entire life from Anonymous. You know that YouTube guy, Fox kind of, scary mask-wearing guy that's got a sort of a hacker thing going on. I just saw it on YouTube. And it's basically, in a masked way, that's a double entendre, calling for violence and revolution against bankers. He calls them banksters. And he tries to go as far as humanly possible to say that this Occupy Wall Street movement is going to target and is going to devolve into something akin to, you know, street revolution and the targeting of bankers. He calls them banksters in a way that it dehumanizes them and targets them and marginalizes them for physical brutality. So it's one of the scariest things I've ever seen.
Andrew, it's funny you mentioned those guys. Van Jones recently, I'm sure you already know, Van Jones has said that supposedly there's going to be a progressive fall offensive, and their goal is like to emulate the Arab Spring. In other words, they want to create what they call, you know, a popular uprising, which you know very well with the left is neither popular nor a real uprising. You know, it's usually fabricated.
Here's what I've noticed. It's the same people, and they've tried to be nice in creating a counter Tea Party, which was community organizing done by the least likely people to take on community organizing, the American middle class, saying we're not going to pay for your flowered piven utopia towards revolutionary hell. So the community organizing that happened was the Tea Party. So these people got freaked out because their own tricks were used against them. And so they started the coffee party to try and create a juxtaposition that somehow the Tea Party, which Janet Napolitano attempted to frame as being Timothy McVeigh-like in its desire to have some type of a, you know, armed conflict or or terror component. Instead, the Tea Party manifested itself as a group that was self-cleaning. It would reject people by physically throwing out people who looked like outsiders and agitators and people that would act in a racist fashion, and it cleaned up after itself. And so the Coffee Party was rejected by the American people because its entire premise was based upon trying to appear that we are a reasonable group of people against this racist, violent Tea Party. So what did they do next? They tried to find a bunch of John McCain kind of accommodationists like David Frum and Mark McKinnon.
Oh, I can't stand David Frum, by the way, Andrew Breyer.
Right,
so they
created a no labels thing, which was clearly the left trying to find as many people on the right, Meghan McCain types, to say, I want to distance myself from the Tea Party because, well, the Tea Party is, as the media is portraying it, violent and extreme. So, of course, they were able to find David Frums and Mark McKinnons and Meghan McCain's to try that. It didn't work. So after the devastating loss last November, Richard Trumka of the AFL-CIO has been in the White House probably more than anyone other than Andy Stern, former head of the SEIU, and they orchestrated what you saw in Wisconsin. And that failed. So this, and we've seen other events such as the anti-Coke demonstrations, such as the one that I rollerbladed at, that got these socialists and these anarcho-astroturfists to be caught on camera calling for a bloody revolution, calling on camera to string up Clarence Thomas, to lynch Clarence Thomas. That was an event that was orchestrated by Greenpeace, Van Jones, Robert Reich, public employee unions, and Code Pink. And that failed. That failed. And so this is the same group of people trying to step it up. And so they're no longer trying to pretend no labels or coffee party, that they're reasonable. They see three election cycles in a row. November of 2009, the election of Governor McDonnell and Christie as reformers. In 2010, the Tea Party debacle for the Democratic Party, and then losing the Anthony Weiner's seat shows a trend. And so these people are right now showing a desperation that shows that the Marxist Leninists in them, the revolutionaries in them, which has been self-evident to anyone that's paying attention to the degree that we are, that these people are Marxists, they are revolutionaries, they are anarchists, and they are socialists, and they're getting very desperate. And this anonymous video is showing me that they are desperately trying to create something like what Van Jones says he wants, which is an Arab Spring, which is does not bode well for a country like ours, which is a peaceful democracy.
No, it really, it's funny for all the, despite what liars like Charles Johnson says, and we'll get to him in a minute.
all roads lead to Jazzy.
Yeah, exactly, the jazz guitarist, the philosopher king, the sage of Culver City, as I call him. Do they really believe they could win a civil war against the right? I mean, I'm not advocating civil war whatsoever, but I mean, I'm trying to put myself in their mindset. What did they think?
Jazzy has gotten very angry at me for taking on that question based upon a question posed to me in Lexington, Massachusetts, when people talked about all of the union-based violence and the union-based attacks on Tea Party members. It's been going on in an organized fashion. If there was a correlation, the left, the Jazzy crowd, created a false correlation between Gabby Gifford's attack at the hands of Jared Loughner, who, if anything, was a crazy leftist, tried to make it appear that it was Sarah Palin, or even the Daily Kos tried to make it, appear that somehow I had something to do with it. With zero correlation, the mainstream media ran with it and tried to make the right have to own it. So when you look at, what incident am I talking about? Oh, yeah. When you look at what has happened over the last few years, when you had the day that the deputy White House chief of staff, Jim Messina, says we need to punch back twice as hard, and that same night, the same night that the head of the AFL-CIO, John Sweeney, sends out a letter saying to the rank and file, you need to get into the faces of the town hall protesters who are asking basic questions about Obamacare, which they were trying to push down our throats. That was the night that both in Tampa and at Russ Carnahan's Missouri town hall, that SEIU purple-shirted thugs started to attack the people that were outside trying to ask basic questions. I was attacked by the IBEW Local 357 and caught it on tape with them throwing eggs at a moving Tea Party bus. And when I was there filming it, the people who threw the eggs threatened me with physical violence. These are the type of things that Jazzy and his magical ponytail conspicuously ignore. And so when I go and I do these speeches, Jazzy and his magical ponytail seem to have, it's a radar to know where I am and is paying attention to what I'm saying, but selectively edits out the context of what I'm saying in order to try and make me portray like I'm calling for violence. I give a recitation of acts of violence by the unions that are tacitly endorsed by the leadership of this country and by the unions that put this leadership into power, where they're attacking the American people and the Justice Department is looking the other way. And I stand by what I have to say. If the rule of law is not being followed, if America no longer becomes a nation of law in which one group of people can attack the other, our side has the right to defend itself.
Well, Andrew, something like that similar happened down in Colombia, where back in the 80s and early 90s, the FARC was running wild, and then the landowners, in conjunction, admittedly, with some of the with some of the cartels, formed the Colombian self-defense forces, and they ended up cleaning the FARC's clock. So sometimes, when the central government is not meeting its responsibility, people do have to defend themselves. You're no way in hell we're advocating any violence. You were just saying that if this continues, people got to defend themselves, which, guess what? It's a truthful statement.
And I don't know what happened to Jazzy, because I introduced him at the opening of Pajamas Media at 30 Rock. I think it's called the Rainbow Lounge on the top. And I was asked by Roger Simon, the founders of Pajamas Media, Roger Simon and Charles Johnson, for me to introduce them. And so I had a history with Charles Johnson in linking, when I worked back at the Drudge Report, linking to his article, as relates to Dan Rather. And over the years, probably like since, late 2004 through, perhaps 2007, I would see him periodically. In fact, one time I went to lunch with him to introduce him to David Horowitz, of all people. Because I thought that what was happening to him and his claims of being under threat, his life being under threat because of radical Islamists, because Little Green Footballs had taken such an admirable tack against radical Islam since 9/11, and I believed him that he was under threat. So I thought that I would put him in contact with as many people as humanly possible. During that period of time, we became rather friendly because neither of us felt necessarily comfortable naturally in Republican quarters, because both of us used to consider ourselves, liberals. And
right.
So he and I would be at these parties, and I would try and explain to him the culture of the right and why these people dress so nicely and why they're so polite and why they don't understand the newfangled rock and roll. And I was as close to him, I think, as anybody could be, given that we were in the same town and we had similar orientations. And I watched I don't know when it started, in 2008 or something, as he started to devolve. I had witnessed this with Arianna Huffington, coincidentally, when she went from the right to the left, and how overnight the things that she was paying attention to switched, and the people that used to hate her in Brentwood started to like her, and she started to do everything she could to play to what were previously the people that she held, you know, in contempt. So
right.
I had a history of watching this happen around me, and I watched it happen, and I stopped reading Little Green Footballs, and every now and then I would see that other websites that I paid attention to, like Hot Air or Ace of Spades, were caught up in battles with Little Green Footballs, and I kind of just shrugged it off, and it's like, I don't know what happened to that guy. But at no point did I think that he would ever take it out on me. And I thought that Hot Air could defend itself, and I thought that Ace of Spades could defend itself. And I always thought, I wonder if I'll ever run into this guy, you know, in a public setting, and be able to ask him these questions, you know, in a civil circumstance, because I thought we had a pretty good history.
Right.
But when the Acorn scandal broke, he started to attack me. And he started to attack me on ethics grounds and on racism grounds.
And he attacked you very viciously, may I add. Very viciously.
Oh, I know. I was like, really? And I must say, I honestly did think, you know, in science fiction kind of, you know, because he lived so mysteriously where he wouldn't tell people where he lived. And he always had this kind of weird vibe to him, like a person that isn't natural to social settings.
I was just gonna ask you that. How did you find Charles in person? Was there always something weird or shady about him?
He just seemed uncomfortable with his fellow human being, and there are people who are shy, and he was around. I thought it was because he was around Republicans and conservatives and was just coming from the other place. And I also thought it was because he had death threats and claimed that he needed security and or, you know, to do things to protect himself, because what he was doing against radical Islamists and exposing jihad and Sharia. And I just chalked up his eccentricities to, you know, A, him being under constant attack because he was being bold and courageous in the face of the Islamist threat. And I thought he had a naturally shy countenance. That's what I chalked it up to be. Was he awkward? On a 1 to 10 scale, I'd say about a 4 or a 5.
Yeah, because my whole thing with Charles, I always notice, is he gets obsessed with boogeymen. Like, for example, a while back, it was all but insinuated that somehow Ron Paul was the head of some new Fourth Reich, and somehow all these groups, the Roms, Milan, tobacco companies, were all interconnected into massive plot to cover global warming.
Yeah. What I did start to notice in 2008 was this weird obsession on intelligent design. I think he knows this about me, is that I'm agnostic, and I'm not that religious, obviously, if I'm agnostic, and that I was I'm basically a secular Jew from the west side of LA who just can't stand the radical left and
right.
Radical Islamists, and that's it. I'm not that political. I just can't stand Marxist, the politically correct, multiculturalism. Political correctness was the very reason he was in the trouble that he was with the Islamists, because the Sharia crowd doesn't believe in the rights and free speech of gays and women. They believe in oppressing them, but they demand in our culture the same rights that they deprive others in their religion. And I found that CARE, which had targeted Little Green Footballs,
right,
was using the politically correct cultural Marxist, playbook in order to try and silence him. And so to watch Charles now do a 180 and now use the same exact tools that Kerr used against him, trying to make him out to be a racist. I think they even condemned Little Green Footballs as a hate site. And so when he's been the object of taking his scrutiny of radical Islam and trying to frame him as a racist and to frame him as a hater, which the left media and the left blogosphere granted that that assessment, for him to use that against a former ally who was defending him under those circumstances, for him to use the same exact tactics of guilt by association, when I repudiate racism, sexism, he tries to use comments in my unmoderated comment section, which could or could not have been planted by his own commenters, and to try and imply that I'm a racist when I boldly disagree with the sentiment therein. There are thousands of opinions in my comment section, comments that disagree with one another. For him to take things that exist in my comment section to make it appear as if those people are my fans or that they reflect my point of view when I make blanket statements condemning racism shows how disingenuous this fuckface is.
No, and Andrew, here's the whole thing. I have a feeling it was Charles Minions who planted those comments. But let me tell you why. There's one person who's one of his lieutenants over there by the name of Kilgore Trout. And 2 years back, he went on hot air and started planting the N-word. And what's funny, and, you know, he got busted for that. But what's funny is this one guy, Kilgore Trout, always goes to all these websites, all these conservative websites, and he mysteriously finds racist comments. Well, you know, he keeps finding them. What's my conclusion? He's probably planting them, and that's what probably happened. Charles sent his minions over there, and they planted Daily Now.
Well, look, I can't prove that one way or the other,
right?
But he can't prove who those people are, and there is an obvious interest of people on the left to negate any thought of a person on the right by calling them a racist. I can prove that because Charles was the subject of those attacks for years when Little Green Footballs was Little Green Footballs up until about 2008. So he understands that perfectly. And so there was an attempt to frame the Tea Party as racist. So a group desirous of being able to get video that affirmed that point of view created an organization, I think it was called InfiltrateTheTeaParty.org. Or a verb like infiltrate. And they would go and dress up like Nazis at tea parties and then take pictures of themselves and put it up on the internet. That was because they couldn't find the evidence they were looking for, so they had to manufacture it. And so if you're a left-winger over in Media Matters, if you're just a left-winger in general, and we want to talk about Obamacare and say we don't like it, it has a redistributive engine underneath it, robbing from the rich to give to the poor, you know, it's just pure Marxism through and through. The only thing that they can throw out is the racism thing. So when they have an army of people online who are motivated to fight, MoveOn.org, Huffington Post commenters like crazy, they have a compelling interest to go into conservative sites to make conservatives look as bad as humanly possible. And so I would never go over to a left-of-center site and say, all of their people are saying this, therefore the person who runs the site is racist. It's very, very bad and desperate and illogical, but it just shows how desperate this guy is. To I don't even know what his goals are, to be honest with you. I don't know. I mean, I honestly consider myself a peripheral person in this battle, but when I started to see what he was doing and the tactics he was using, I thought that I'd transfer my obsession from Eric Bullard at Media Matters, who started to bore me, over to Little Green Footballs, because I thought I could perhaps draw in some of you guys to start paying attention to expose how duplicitous this guy is and how, you know, he's obsessed with me. Yet from the very beginning I said, if you have a problem with me, I'm willing to debate you on my tactics, my ethics, my history. And then he says, I'm not going to grant you the respect that that, you know, that that warrants by because you're so low. I mean, what a chicken shit. He spends hours and hours and hours and post after post after post obsessing on me. Yet, like Eric Bullard, neither of them or anyone on the left is willing to go on talk radio, is willing to go on a college campus, is willing to go on a podium and to go mano a mano and debate on the points. And you bring your proof that I showed Ann Coulter, Anthony Weiner's, cockpit.
Well, Andrew, here's the whole thing with Charles, okay? He's nobody to speak because on a daily basis, you know, and if anybody, you know, and I'm sure you've glanced through the Diary of Dallas, on a daily basis, there are very hateful comments on his own blog. So it's kind of like the pot calling the kettle black. So he'll accuse you of stuff he's doing. And when you were saying what his goal basically is to have another Dan Rather moment. It basically, here's the thing. When he went to the left, he's not accepted by them. They really don't trust him because he was so big pro-Israel that, you know, to join the left, you have to throw Israel under the bus. Charles hasn't thrown Israel under the bus yet. However, he's been attacking, you know, big supporters of Israel. He's been having anti-Israel, you know, on the pages things. He has something on the side. He even has, like, Islamist on there. I mean, he has Islamist
You're saying he's – what he's trying to do is by going after people in the right-wing blogosphere, that this is his way of gaining re-entry into the world that rejected him because he doesn't feel comfortable in the right. But you know what? The right, he got rejected from the Moneybags over at Little Green Football. It is a well-funded organization, and once he was no longer there, he no longer had anybody to support him, and that's one of the hard things about being on the right. I mean, I saw that with Arianna Huffington. You know, we both lived on the west side of L.A., and, you know, her salon was crickets when she was on the right. When she switched to the left, not only did the handsome and the well-dressed and the rich and the famous come to her house, but so did the hardcore left-wing money that paid to create the Huffington Post. And the thing is, that's where the money exists. The left likes to create this, you know, false impression that there are George Soroses on the right, and there just aren't. They like to think that the Koch brothers are out there funding every site. And I can tell you that I'm not funded by the Koch brothers. Ace of Spades isn't. Your site isn't. It's a projection onto us.
No, because here's the thing. That's why I always, on the regular blog, Blogmocracy, I always call, you know, I always laugh when the left says they are starting a, quote, popular uprising. Because if you study Cold War history, that's a very Marxist term. You know, in other words, but there's nothing popular about it. It's usually manufactured, just like this, fall offensive Van Jones is saying. It's not like us on the right, where when I went to a tea party down here in Tampa, I currently reside in Tampa, I'm originally from Queens, New York. So I'm actually an urban conservative, so I actually understand where you're coming from, how, like, there's a little cultural difference between, you know, liberals and, let's say, conservatives, so to speak, that even though my policies are very conservative, you know, a lot of my habits are very urban. You understand where I'm coming from, you know? So,
indeed.
So you understand what I mean. You know, I could go out to a club by VIP. You know, I grew up that hip-hop. I even DJed rap in the early 90s. And, you know, now I'm on the conservative side, so I understand what you mean about where you and Charles are coming from. I come from something similar in a sense, you know? So what I'm trying to get at is this guy Charles, basically, he gets obsessed with a target, and now right now he's obsessed with you. He just, every day it's, you know, it's Breitbart this, Breitbart that, Breitbart this, you know? And here's the thing, you're out there. You get death threats. You're on TV. You're getting in these people's faces. I loved it when there was this union protest and you got up to their faces and you told them who's funding them. I forgot what incident that was, but they started walking away from you because they didn't even know what they were protesting.
I said, you don't know what you're protesting. You go up to them and you ask them what their sign means, and their signs are created for them. This is what AstroTurf is. And so I didn't know about this until they started to say that the Tea Party was AstroTurf. And I went, well, what is AstroTurf? And I realized that they, again, they accuse us of that which they're guilty of, that we're hyper-organized. I'm like, no, the people at the Tea Parties are just schlubby middle American people like me who just are pissed off that there's zero accountability in Washington, and there is a fundamental lack of organization other than minuscule, like middle-aged women who are empty nesters who are trying to do what they can to save the country. But the left is highly organized with people like Van Jones and Robert Reich and Bill Ayers types and Professor Peter Dreyer from, you know, Occidental College. I mean, the people from SEIU, the other unions, they are natural leaders who put people together, and they know how to agitate, and they start accusing the people who have stood up against them. They accuse others of the exact things that they're doing. And Charles is could not be more guilty of that.
And my question about Charles, when he broke with Pajama Media, was it a mutual leaving or was he forced out?
I actually don't know.
Okay.
I don't recall that. I think I probably knew that at the time, but, I don't know, actually. I don't know, but... It's strange because I used to see him at parties at Roger Simon's place. I went out to lunch with him definitely a few times, and it's just strange because there's part of me that wonders, because he's such a shut-in, that somebody has a gun to his head or something, because it just seems like he's so crazy. It seems like the people that were harassing him and challenging him and threatening him, it's almost as if he doesn't have a problem with those people anymore. And he's now gone after the people who, the small group of people who were on his side, which are just a bunch of scrappy people who used to defend him because he used to go out there and stick his neck out so much. And so he now feels an obligation to send a message to those people that he used to be in a loose brotherhood with, that he needs to take them out. Before there was Andrew Breitbart as his obsession, there was, Michelle Malkin.
Pam Geller, he was obsessed with.
All a pundit. Yeah, he goes after Pamela Geller for sure, and Ace of Spades. I mean, what do we all have in common other than that we were comrades in arms 3 years ago? So he's specifically going after people who used to defend him. It feels as if he's trying to get himself off of some type of a care Sharia jihadist death list. He creates the appearance that he's trying to undo the damage that he did to those groups in the past by going after us. It just feels that way.
I'll give you for example, Andrew. On LGF, you cannot now say anything critical of Islam, but yet you could trash the Catholic Church all day and night on LGF, you know, with the whole pedophilia scandal and things of that nature. But if you point out, oh, this imam in Iran said that, oh, you're racist, oh, you're fear-mongering, blah, blah, blah. That's LGF to this day. And here's what's funny. Charles is accusing you, and listen to this irony. Charles is accusing you of trying to get information on someone who confronted you, okay? Here's something Charles did. That lovely lady, M, who you spoke with when you called in for the show, Charles Johnson, she donated money, okay, to his PayPal account. Charles Johnson outed her identity using the PayPal account. So who is he to criticize
why
you?
Why did he out her?
Because we criticized him. He outed my identity. He outed my co-host, King Minus's identity. He outed a lot of people's identity who trusted him.
Yeah, yeah. He did. You know, it's funny. He sees Charles Johnson's ponytail truly is magical. When he saw the photo of Ann Coulter looking surprised at something,
while talking to another person who wasn't me, he derived that I had that she had just seen the Anthony Weiner photo as shown by me when I'm not in that frame, though I was at that event. It's categorically not true that I showed Ann Coulter that image, okay? It is categorically untrue, but he derived that and tried to build a scenario up that I don't even know what the point was. There's nothing wrong with showing somebody proof of something that he's claiming doesn't exist. It was proof. It was such proof that Gawker, when the photo was taken surreptitiously by Opie and Anthony, nobody got upset with Gawker for publishing the photo. I had just stated that I had no desire to put it on my site and to get the millions of page views off of it. But it is an inherently newsworthy photo that if my friends asked me to see it, I had no problem with showing it. But he tried to make it appear that I had done something nefarious. But he had no proof other than a photo where he derived something. And the same thing can be said of that photo of that guy sitting there who accosted me at the Brentwood Country Mart. His magical ponytail tried to see in that photo, saying, look at that guy. He's sitting there smiling, looking bemused. The reason why the guy is sitting there smiling is because I went back to my table after the confrontation, and I took a picture of him about 5 minutes later. So he was sitting down finishing up his lunch. The incident had happened about 30 feet away, but without calling me up, without doing any reporting, his magical ponytail was able to derive an entire post yet again in which he has a scenario, an elaborate scenario of what he thought happened, which proves, Dan Rather style, that something didn't happen or something did happen. He's freaking insane.
He's this humor. He invents conspiracy theories. You know, he at one time thought Ron Paul was behind this massive right-wing plot. He always claimed neo-Nazis. He has an obsession with Nazis, by the way. He thinks, like, neo-Nazis are out to get him. Maybe he's played too many World War II video games, in my opinion, you know? But he really has – he invents these conspiracy theories. Sometimes I read what he writes, and it's like, does this guy really believe what he's writing? But you explaining him how he was always kind of, like, a little bit shady and a little, like leery.
He seemed like a person uncomfortable with natural human interaction. I would say it exceeded shyness.
Was he borderline paranoid?
Not when I knew him, no.
Okay.
I don't know if he was paranoid. He told me that he had death threats. He told me that he had to live in a secret place. But the guy was going after radical Islamists in a post 9/11 era after people. I would not. I took him at his word that he had to exist in this kind, live this kind of way without people knowing where he lived because of the threats that he was under. And I took him at his word, and I have no reason to believe he wasn't telling the truth. But I'm telling you, he did act strange. He did act like the person that, for being out of his home, was Bill Murray in what was the name of that movie about Baby Steps? What About Bob?
Yeah, What About Bob? Okay.
Yeah, he seemed like a shut-in, reclusive, neurotic who was making strong attempts to connect with his new allies who wanted to have his back for the hard work that he did against radical Islam in the face of unspeakable pressure from the left and politically correct types like CARE. And so I wanted to give him as much aid and comfort as humanly possible. And I thought that I did that, and I thought I was rewarded with being asked to introduce him and Roger Simon when I had no financial interest in Pajamas Media. I was asked to introduce them, and I did so because I felt that Charles Johnson, shut in or not, was rising to what I felt the country needed, was a few brave men to stand
right.
up against this. And I really am flummoxed that he could become this nauseating person who has begun to embody the very things that he was attacking, you know, 5 to 10 years ago.
Andrew, that's a very, very good point, because if you look at LGF 2005, most of the articles were about, like, Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, Muslim Brotherhood, CARE. Now you fast forward to today. The
mocking Rachel Corey.
Yes, of this pancake he called her. Saint Pancake.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
now,
the type of stuff that when I mock and ridicule far leftists who are involved in Occupy Wall Street malarkey, who are involved in public sector union attacks, where I mock these people, he's the first one to, you know, play the politically correct card. Of course I'm going to fight, you know, rhetorical fire with rhetorical fire. The problem with the right, as I told him when he was trying to ingratiate himself with the right, was people on the right play by Marcus of Queensberry rules. They
Thank
believe
you.
That there's and being that he and I came from the liberal side and from Hollywood, we're profane, we believe in loud music, sex, drugs, and rock and roll doesn't bother us so much. And so I was trying to explain to him who these people are that had taken a liking to him, because they were a space alien, you know, group to him. I'm like, yeah, it's weird. It's weird being embraced by the Tea Party type people who are normal, unassuming Americans,
right.
you know, who would give you the shirt off their back and feed you. The thing is, I'd say they'd still feed the magical ponytail right now, and they're incredibly forgiving. But what's missing right now is an explanation how he went from being one person to this person. It's the exact opposite, and he is embodying the very things that he was under, that he was assaulting in a withering manner for so many years. It's just too spooky to think that this person turned 180 degrees and decided to do so on his former allies.
Andrew, are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Savage. I'm the co-host of the Blogmocracy talk radio show. Do you want to take in a few callers? We've had people waiting quite a bit, quite a while. Okay, the first one I want to bring in is somebody who's quite a legend in his own space and everything. We want to bring on Chen Zhen. Hi, Chen. How are you?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
All right, I thought you'd bring in as the first one, since you're quite a fixture on the Boiler Room crew.
Well, I did come bearing gifts, 100,000 retweets to be distributed amongst you all.
Uh-huh.
Yes. I guess I didn't really have a question for Andrew. I was just kind of... in fact, I didn't even know he was coming on. I just kind of got on just because I haven't talked to you guys in a while.
Okay.
But that is pretty interesting. So high fives.
Well, thank you, Chen. Any big explosive article coming up? Or
well, we do have some collaboration going behind the scenes for some new players. I can't divulge too much information, but there are some new players on the scene in the Boiler Room, and I think you know, there's some names that probably surprise some of the lizard family. So yeah, we got to keep that kind of on the down low. But yeah, there's some things shaking. I've been kind of tied up in just kind of the real world lately with my job and everything. So you guys haven't noticed me around as much, but I'm still kind of interacting, you know, a little bit with the, you know, kind of the behind the scenes stuff that we're working on. And yeah, so yeah, again, I was just calling in to say hi, just because it's been a little while, and I don't know if you guys have missed me or not. But...
Well, Chandler, I'm very glad you called.
Well, so am I. Yeah, it's been interesting. It's been interesting so far. I didn't know like a lot about this. I didn't know that Andrew was part of Pajamas Media. Maybe I just hadn't paid that.
No. At the very beginning, I advised them in the first a couple of their first meetings together, and Charles was a part of it. Rock Simon was a part of it from afar. What's his name? Professor Glenn Reynolds was a part of it. Jill Stewart was a part of it. You know, I'd love to talk to Jill Stewart because I'm still friends with Jill Stewart. She's managing editor of the LA Weekly, and I would say that, you know, Jill and you know, like if we were at a party back at the in 2005 when that started, I felt that Jill and Charles were the ones that I would go to when I walked into a room for whatever reason. And so it'd be interesting to find out from Jill what she thinks happened, if anything, if she's even paid attention to what's happened, because Jill is as close to an objective journalist as you're going to get. She's a Democrat, writes for the LA Weekly, but has been merciless towards, you know, the teachers union in her writing, and is very politically incorrect. And I'd love to find out what happened to Charles through Jill, because I think she could be as objective as anybody possibly could. And I don't know if she favors him or not.
Yeah, that would be very interesting. We have another caller, Carolina Girl. She's also a former lizard band by Charles. Hello, Carolina Girl.
Hello, how is everyone?
Hi, Carolina Girl. I've got Andrew Breitbart here. If you have any questions.
Oh, I know. I am a huge fan, Andy. You're not on Red Eye nearly enough. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, yeah, they don't do remote shows anymore, so I'm in L.A., so I only do it when I'm in New York, and so it's kind of difficult. It would be fun.
Yeah, because it's a great show. I hope, you know, more people start to watch it. I was curious if you were ever going to start one of the on your website, something about global warming. I don't know. You could call it big heat. I don't know. But,
yeah, we own Big Environment, and I was thinking of starting it. But
yeah.
I felt that after the East Anglia emails happened, that phenomenon is still alive, but not really. It's especially when there's no money and there's no economy, that what they want to do to the American economy and to American industry in the name of the environment, while at the same time granting third world countries carte blanche to do whatever they want to the environment, it's a flat out global redistribution scam. And when it was exposed that the peer-to-peer review was nothing more than the type of intimidation and bullying and thuggery that we're seeing from the left in the public square, in which if you disagree with the prevailing orthodoxy, you're kicked out of the club. And there's billions of dollars in this racket in order to uphold the racket, in order to affirm the racket. So if you come out there and say, this hockey stick, these numbers are garbage, instead of being given an award for maintaining the standards of excellence in science, you're marginalized, you're attacked, you're told you're not part of the club. They want to be able to shove as many false data into the equation as humanly possible, and to use the matrix of Hollywood and the news media in order to create a layer of protection. And it's just a propaganda war of epic proportion. But I really do think that the last 2-3 years
and the East Anglia emails have made it so that it's a dying religion.
Oh, except for one particular website, which seems to, I mean, that was another thing Charles went kablooey on, was his sudden espousing of the whole global warming hoax. And we're all, you know, and now, of course, all Republicans are anti-science and anti-this and anti-that. And it's
oh, and we're dominionists. And we're dominionists, you know? The thing is, the theocracy and the Sharia that he hated and exposed, that's manifestly obvious and not even explained away in Islam, is now applied to Andrew Breitbart as somehow part of a dominionist anti-science cabal when I'm a secular agnostic Jew from West L.A.
Well, he can justify anything, you know that.
Right. And all we say is, we want a debate. We believe in free speech on this stuff. You show me data that shows to me that there's anthropogenic global warming that isn't coerced, that isn't part of a well-funded, propaganda mill. Maybe I'm up for it. But these people won't debate. After James Cameron demanded a debate with me and then canceled as I'm heading to the airport to go to the Action Institute to go debate him. You know, Al Gore says the debate's over. We won't debate you. We won't go on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's crazy talk. Why won't anybody talk to Salem McAleer and Ann McElhinney, the journalists of, they can go out there and debunk half of the talking points of Lori David and Al Gore and James Cameron.
Yeah.
Andrew, just to break in for a moment, Caroline and Andrew, this is something that's always bugged me about the modern scientific community. All the effort they're putting into, quote, combat with your imaginary global warming, if they put that into a serious space program, and I'm talking about real space exploration, space colonization, because humanity, we're basically one asteroid away from being exterminated, okay?
There are two words that I can give you that will show you how disingenuous these people are on global warming. That's Bjorn Lomborg. Because it's not about the science. It's about that the science and the propaganda is tied to legislation. All the legislation conspicuously is involved in moving money from one district to another, one country to another, in order to fulfill the social justice, economic justice, and green justice models, where the way that the global left and the global communist movement and the global socialist movement wanted to move this money around just on pure principle, now does so in the name of, green justice. And Bjorn Lomborg accepts the premise that anthropogenic global warming is going to happen, but he negates. He says, if you put all these trillions of dollars, if you cripple American industry, if you cripple, if you do all these things, it's not going to affect the climate one iota, and it's going to put America into the poorhouse. And he says, these are the things that you can do practically that will have an effect, but they're not socialist and redistributionist, and therefore nobody on the left wants to look at it, because the whole point of the green stuff or the former global cooling stuff or whatever they want to call it is based upon redistribution of wealth.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, I don't think Charles is making that much money anymore, so I think that's why he supports this agenda, because he wants some wealth redistributed to him, you know? So
I had to tell my kids. My kids came upstairs, and I had to kindly, assertively push them downstairs.
Yeah, no, I said that. I understand why now Charles really subscribes to this global warming agenda, because since he's not making that much money anymore, since he pissed off a lot of his readership, he wants the money redistributed to him, you know? So that's why he's
I'll also say this, that, you know, I haven't really thought so much about the origins of this, but I think that there's a point to be made, is that if you're going to get back into the good graces of the left, there are certain religious aspects of being on the left that are points that you have to make, that you have to go out of your way. And one is global warming, and one is an anti-Christian sort of thing. And that's his thing. The way to ingratiate yourself with the left is to overplay your hand of trying to say, hey, look, hey, guys, I want to be in your club. Look how much I'm attacking people on the right for being Christianist. Look at how much I'm attacking people on the right for being haters. Look at how much I'm hitting them on global warming. That's like the trifecta: political correctness, global warming, and whatever.
This like soft spot for Islamic imperialism the left has. I mean, they really, because you know what it is? They view Islam as like some third world revolutionary force. And you know, the Western left always falls in love with these third world figures. So now Ahmadinejad is the new Che. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's what a lot of it is also.
It's just too bizarre. It just is too bizarre because it's him going on. I understand why Ariana did it. She went from, you know, having nobody coming over to her house to having, you know, Warren Beatty and Meg Ryan, you know, and David Geffen hanging out at her house. Before that, it was Harry Shearer and Robert Shearer would come over, and there were crickets there. And so she's made a killing moving that way. But what on God's green earth has he benefited from, perhaps but a fatwa removed? Maybe this is somebody saying, I'll remove the fatwa against you if you go after these people.
That's a very realistic theory. I have another caller here. It's one of our another ex-lizard from Arizona. It is Macker. Hello, Macker.
Hello there. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. I have Andrew Breitbart here. Do you have a question for him?
Yes, I actually have a question and a comment. You know, Andrew, I just want to thank you for your role in standing firm as a vanguard against the forces of President Obama and his goons. You know, what you've done to the left, to ACORN, Planned Parenthood, and the unions, has set an example for citizens, journalists around the world, and you are doing what the now fifth column treasonous media refuses to do. Now, here's my question, Andrew. Please tell us that you have an ace in the hole for the 2000 election. All you have to do is just say yes,
oh,
you do.
Oh, please,
or no,
please,
not
come
yet.
On, come on. That's just silly talk. I mean, what I answered if I did, but I mean, I don't. Sorry, I just we're eating in 5 minutes at the house.
Okay.
I'm always on the lookout for the goods. Just let it be known, the difference between me and others with this type of stuff is you can't just blog about it. You have to have a strategy in order to take it to the market. On the Anthony Weiner thing, you go into this knowing that they're going to accuse you of lying or manipulating. So you have to be prepared for that. You have to have a strategy to take them on. And that's you have to weaponize your content. You have to have a strategy to make it ubiquitous and to beat them at their own game. And that's what we did with ACORN. We aimed it at the mainstream media, assuming that they were going to take ACORN's side, that when the first video came out, that ACORN was going to not deny what you were seeing with your own eyes. And when they denied that when they said this was an isolated incident, then we showed the second video. When the second video happened, they said, oh, they were kicked out of Los Angeles, New York, and Philadelphia. And in fact, they had successfully gone into those offices and they aided and abetted in their nefarious project. And so every step of the way that the media predictably went along with Acorn, it didn't just make Acorn look stupid, it made the Democrat media complex, the media, look stupid as well. And so you have to understand, it's not just about getting the goods. I mean, look at the goods on Solyndra. But what is ABC, CBS, and NBC doing about it? You have to come up with a strategy to make it so that these people are held to account. That's what I'm trying to teach people. And I'm hoping that people start realizing that the way that the left was able to mollify people in the realm of the media was to claim that there's something called objectivity. Objectivity was just a weapon that the left would use. It took over the media and said, hey, we're just objective people. And it was their way of finding, you know, find a Walter Cronkite who's an activist at heart and who showed his true colors later in life, trying to help cover up for Bill Clinton at the height of the Lewinsky thing. And he went out on Cape Cod in a boat with the Clintons to try and, you know, make it look like, hey, look, I support the Clintons in their time of peril when he's lying to the country and he's lying under oath and subverting somebody's, you know, rights. There was the person that represented neutrality inserting himself at the latter part of his life. That's what we're up against. We are up against fifth columnists who happen to be journalists. We are up against fifth columnists who happen to be actors and directors. The left was able to infiltrate our country through its cultural systems, and this is an existential battle.
I totally agree. Andrew, I have another caller here. It's the person who booked you here. It is Mr. Bunk. Hello, Bunk. I have Andrew on.
Hey there. Hey there, everybody. Booga booga and all that stuff. Andrew, I've got one quick question. I know you got to go. And it's a little bit lighter. Why do you even bother with the tweet wars with Charles Johnson? Well, why don't you just ignore him?
I don't know how many times you've heard me state this, but I'm petty.
I saw that.
I whether it be a person at the Brentwood Country Mart harassing me, going out of their way to try and harass me, you know, the guy that I was having lunch with said, oh, just ignore it. I'm like, no, it's not in my nature.
Oh, we saw that. You're talking about the guy that got up in your face and all.
I said, don't touch me. He tapped me. You know, and I said, don't touch me. He tapped me again. I think he wanted to get punched by me, and I didn't want to be drawn into that. So I thought the best way to out him was to out him and take a picture of him and let people see what this guy is about. And that's what I'm trying to do with Charles Johnson.
But you also know the rule of blogging is you don't feed the trolls.
Okay, well, I break so many of the rules, it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, Keith Olbermann, you know, when he was at MSNBC getting $200,000, $300,000 a night, spent every night going after Bill O'Reilly, trying to get his goad. You're supposed to attack the person above you, and if it hits and the person reacts, that's supposed to be your victory moment. Well, I work upon the exact opposite. I go after everyone. I mean, I find myself being attacked by people, anonymous people with 3 followers on Twitter, and I'll just attack for hours on end. And I hope that people who are paying attention are entertained by it, because to me, I look at the stream and I find myself laughing, thinking that this has to be interpreted by any reasonable person as incredibly humorous performance art.
Well, I watch it a little bit, and you retweet all of the crap tweets that you get.
I'm called gay by everybody on the left, and so Charles Johnson is obsessed now with political correctness and pointing out that people on the right are hateful against gay people and black people and anyone that isn't. You know, cock.
But the left always brings
with a with a magical ponytail. But he's
conspicuously. Andrew.
Let me finish. He's conspicuously absent. He obsesses on my Twitter feed, which is filled with anti-gay bilge, and he doesn't attack the left for exhibiting the things that he claims that are only supposedly on the right. So he's such a hypocrite. He's such a fantastical Dungeons and Dragons, you know, inside, shut in, you know, Anthony Perkins like, you know, freak show. You know who he looks like? Yeah.
He once thought, okay, in the early days of the Tea Party, there was these people with the Tennessee state flag. He swore it was the symbol of some South African neo-Nazi group. I am not kidding you. He was claiming the Tennessee flag was a Nazi symbol. I kid you not.
Oh, and the Ohio flag, too.
The
Ohio flag was Obama's.
And if he wasn't paying attention to Free Republic and paying attention to Buckhead, you know, he wouldn't. And if I didn't link to him, nobody, you know, would know who he is. So it's those people who he's attacking, the Buckheads of the world over at Free Republic and Andrew Breitbart's of the world, he would not be a publicly known person had I not drawn attention to what he did on the Dan Rather thing. And so I apologize for having helped Hayden the Bet in hoisting his magical ponytail, his jazzy magical ponytail into your lives.
Andrew, you are forgiven because Charles Johnson has provided so much entertainment for me blogging the last 3 years. I'm glad you brought that clown on the scene.
I know. But we have more important things to do, and I hope that he gets that fatwa taken off of him from CARE and the radical Islamists, because he's had to throw a lot of people under the bus in the process, and he's had to believe in crazy dominionist conspiracy theories in order to do so. And I just want to end on the note that everything that I do is in the secret pursuit of trying to put intelligent design into the classrooms of Los Angeles Unified School District. Bye, Charles.
Thank you, Andrew. That's great.
Andrew, thanks
okay,
a lot for calling in. Okay,
bye,
Andrew,
bye.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Bye.
Bye-bye, man.
Oh,
well, guys,
wow. Is that a jaw dropper or what?
Everybody, I just want to thank Bunk over here, everyone. Bunk was the one who brought in Andrew Breitbart, and I'm going to bring everybody in one-on-one so we can have our little powwow council. We have a lot of people on hold, so I'm going to start. Let me bring in, because he's been waiting forever. Let me bring in the Osprey.
Hey, Osprey.
Hey, guys, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes, we can.
Yeah, we can hear you fine. Did you enjoy the show?
Oh, most definitely. You know, I guessed that it was going to be Breitbart as the guest, but it was still a pleasant surprise, and he had some very interesting things to say about our dear friend Chucky.
And it makes sense, doesn't it, Osprey, about him being like awkward in public and not good at socializing? It makes perfect sense.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah,
and probably some things I would have liked to have asked him. It's too bad he couldn't have stayed on a little bit longer, but it was still a very, very interesting, show.
Well, Osprey, in the background, we were discussing how to go about this, and decided that we probably just use it as an Andrew Breitbart forum. Excuse me, Breitbart. And let him just go on as long as he wanted without
without being badgered by questions. No, that was great because it gave him a real chance to kind of expand on his whole relationship with our dear friend Chuckles and how his kind of experience with it kind of jived with ours and so forth. Now, it was very, very interesting. In fact, I'll probably listen to it again on the recorded version because I'm actually over at some friend's house for dinner, so I've been kind of popping in and out of the conversation, as it were.
So you're having dinner with Breitbart?
No. I'm over with friends here in Arizona.
All right. Let me bring on, so I'm bringing everybody one-on-one on. Let me bring in Canoe Convoy. Hello, Canoe Convoy.
Hello. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you. How you doing? Long time no speak.
Yeah, it's been a while. It was really interesting.
just listening to Breitbart, I never it's been a long time since I have been able to call in, so I figured, what the hell? I mean, I get, you know, radio show on tonight, so why the hell not?
Well, Pilgrim, yeah. I gotta tell you, that was not a bad dinner at all. Right.
Yeah, and it, like I said, it was a surprise. We knew this middle of the week, but we were trying to keep it under wraps as a surprise. And then when we got the confirmation today, that's what we told everyone to tune in. This is really huge, you know. And I really feel honored talking to Andrew Breitbart because he is one of the heroes out there taking on the left. I mean, he's out there. He's not like Charles who sits in some, you know, some basement, you know, with bags of Cheetos and pisses in a bottle. You know what I'm saying? He's out there in people's faces getting real death threats, not thinking Nazi snipers from Flanders is waiting outside of his house, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, so it's a privilege to talk to someone who's the real deal. I'm going to bring on now the one and the only Dorian Gray. Hello, Dorian.
Hey.
Hey, man. So what do you think of the interview with Andy, man?
I thought that was great. As you may have noticed in my own blogging, I've been very aware of the whole Marxist situation that's going on, and I am very encouraged that Andrew is apparently every bit as aware of it as I am, understands that what we're really seeing is an attempted Marxist coup.
That is absolutely what we're seeing here, my friend.
Yeah, and like I said, Andrew has the public stature, the public visibility that I don't think there's really anybody else out there right now who has it, who understands what the real threat is. You know,
well, I think a lot of the reason why you and Andrew might have a lot of the same, how can I say, observations about the Marxists, is the backgrounds you all come from. You came from the rock and roll scene, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll. I'm not saying you did that per se, but you come from that milieu, so to speak. Andrew Breitbart says he's a West Hollywood, you know, agnostic Jewish person. So he comes from that similar scene. Maybe he, who knows, maybe he saw you in concert one day. You know what I'm saying? So you guys know a lot of how these people think. Would that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, we are from California, and the Marxism here is just got a very thin coat of paint over it.
Mm-hmm.
Scratch the surface, and you see it below the surface really, really clear. Yeah.
Hard red. You see, maybe pink on the outside, but deep red on the inside.
Oh, yeah. Actually, it's green on the outside and deep red on the inside, but
yeah.
Especially here in California, we've got a real bad Enviro-Nazi green movement. And like I said, you scratch the surface of that, and it's pure Marxism.
You guys,
you know,
really, California, the left out there doing, I don't mean to interrupt, you really have all facets of the left. You have the, you know, the militant homosexuals. You have, and notice I'm using the term militant, you know what I'm saying, the militant homosexual movement. You have the environmentalists. You have black nationalists. You have La Raza, which is an arm of the third world, you know, the Latin American third world liberation movement, you know, Chavez.
Yep.
And then you have the union thugs. I mean, you have every variety of the left in California.
Oh, we got the Crips, too. Don't forget them.
Which, actually, the Crips did start off as a community organization, people. Yes, sir.
Well, so are the Hells Angels. We got them, too.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say the Crips really started off as a community organization. I'm just a little too familiar with their history for me to buy that one.
Okay, because that's what the background is. Supposedly they started as a community group and then turned into, you know, the gang we know today.
Well, community group as if you mean a bunch of drug dealers who got together to protect their territory.
And claimed they were doing it for politics or something, you know?
Yeah, the politics of keeping their asses from going to prison.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Let me bring on now Brooklyn Red. Hello, Brooklyn.
Good evening.
Hey, what did you think of the interview with Breitbart?
Well, two things. One, it was a fantastic interview, and two, it was a major feat to have him on.
Hey, all hats off to Bunk. He's the one who organized it.
All hats off to Bunk.
Hey,
I
blame
really
Budweiser.
Hmm?
I blame Budweiser.
I've done that many times before. I know a lot of people are waiting, so I'm not going to hog up a lot of your time.
No, Brooklyn, what we do is a round table. Everyone stays on.
It's a beautiful thing. I just want to stand up and be counted. I know that, you know, mentioning my name pisses off of a number of people, and I'm all right with that.
Cool.
And,
a shut-in jazz musician?
Hmm?
A shut-in Cheetos-eating jazz musician?
Whatever. You know, what was it? If I thought about it at all, I probably wouldn't like it, but I'm so over it. No, this is a very good thing. I'm glad to be a part of it. I just want to, you know, stay on hold. It's a lot less time I spend on hold than I have to talk to, like, Rush Limbaugh or someone. And, no, it's all good. It was great to listen. I was actually on the other end of the phone listening to Andrew Breitbart. And I thank you for putting it out there.
Yeah,
you know,
Brooklyn,
I want to thank you and also anybody else who's called in, anybody on the website and the blog and everything. I want to thank everybody for all their support, because if it wasn't for all you guys, then this we'd be like a little Twitter feed with two comments. That'd be
right. That's what I just said. I want to fly the flag and show my support, say, you go, and now I'll yield to the next guy.
You know what
right.
struck me about Andrew Breitbart, everybody? How humble he came
yeah.
across. He didn't come across arrogant, all-knowing. He just came across like someone like us who just got pissed off and decided to do something about it.
That's him. That's him.
I mean, he was so down to earth. I mean, I felt like I was talking to someone that I knew for a very long time and had 20 beers with and blacked out with and, you know, went on vacation with. You know what I'm saying? That's what I felt like. Someone,
yeah.
you know, like a good friend of yours, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I just want to say that this whole thing is just it really is a group effort. And even though the Boiler Room crew works in the background, Diary of Daedalus does its own thing, the Bloodmocracy does their own thing, but again, this is just the way it used to be over at LGEF, where it's really the commenters and everybody that calls in and pays attention that drives this thing. And it's all fun. And it's also childish. And it's fun.
Oh yeah. Let me bring back on Carolina girl. Hey Carolina girl.
Hello.
Hey
Carolina
girl.
Yeah. Yes.
I see Andrew mentioned Buckethead.
Yes, he did. He mentioned Buckethead.
Yeah.
Always liked him. Buckethead. I've Buckethead.
Yeah.
Bunk somebody else. I was a creeper before I was a lizard, and it always irritated me the way that he stood on Buckhead's shoulders and tried to make that whole story his own. And it was interesting. I did not know that it was Andrew who had alerted him to the entry over at Free, which was. I always thought it was Mrs. Buckhead, actually, who was a lizard. But, it's always interesting to me when Buckhead gets the mention that he always richly deserves for, you know, calling that that fraud the way it was. And that's very, very cool. I was interested in what you were saying about California. Dorian and I both live in California, and he is, you know, it is. If you're a Republican, forget it. But what is interesting, I don't know if this has escaped mention, a bill just got passed, signed by the governor, that our electoral votes go to the popular vote winner. So it's going to crack me up, Royal, if Obama wins California and we give the electoral votes to the popular vote winner instead of the Republican. Can you imagine the legislature in Sacramento on November 7th trying to figure out how they are going to undo this law that they passed. Oh, my God, we've got to give it to Herman Cain, Rick Perry, Mitt Romney, whoever. But, yeah, that's the law
Sarah Palin.
And Sarah Palin, but it's going to crack me up because they passed the law. I went to check. I thought maybe they had just passed a law and it hadn't been signed. But Governor Brown did sign it, and I went, wait a minute. The electoral votes go to the popular vote winner, and if the popular vote winner is the Republican, that's 53 or something, 43 electoral votes for California.
It's
53. Well. Is it 50? It is 53. I thought
we
lost 53. A couple.
No, we didn't. No, we didn't.
Oh,
it stayed the same. No, they didn't lose. It stayed the same, I believe. It was the first time California didn't gain any electoral votes. That's what happened.
We didn't gain any, but we didn't lose any.
Yeah,
we
were expecting to gain, I think it was 5 more to bring us up to 58. But for some reason, we didn't get them, even though our population had gone up. I guess they decided California could decide an entire election all by itself if they let us have 58 electoral votes.
Yeah.
Well, I think part of it is also because even though there was an increase in California's population, other states' populations increased more percentage-wise, so that's probably why it was allotted to other states as opposed to California.
I think only Texas and Ohio had a bigger increase.
Yeah, Texas got what, 2? Texas got
4? No, Texas, I think, got 4.
Yeah,
well,
they got four.
I've got to do some reading, man. Yeah, that was. I know that San Francisco. Something happened in San Francisco where they lost population, and they part of the congressional district now has to go below the city. It would be nice if they would redistrict Nancy Pelosi out of existence, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah, it turns out that although we're having a redistricting here. Apparently, the redistricting has been co-opted by special interest groups.
Yes, I read
that. So now California is going to have gay, lesbian, transgender districts, transplanted Eskimo districts.
I can't wait to see the way that's drawn. Like part of it's in San Francisco, and then it slithers down the coast. And then part of it's in Los Angeles. So I'm figuring
Part of it's in San Francisco. It slithers down the coast and ends up out in El Centro and Imperial County. Like a big-ass snake.
Yeah, El Centro.
You guys are really going to do that? They're really going to have gay and lesbian transgender districts now?
It would not surprise me. It would not surprise me. Not in the least.
It may not technically be gay, lesbian, transgender districts. What it is the redistricting council has decided that special interests need to be represented. What they're specifically talking about at the moment are Hispanic, Native American, Black, and Asian. But once you go down that road, especially here in California, once you go down that road of special interests, well, the next thing you know, you've got the UFO watchers in Imperial County. You've got the gay and lesbian transgender community in San Francisco. You've got the Moonies
in
LA.
The aquatic mammal contingent is kind of important also.
Oh, yeah. And I think Charles, and I wouldn't be surprised if Charles Johnson got his own congressional district. He's big enough, you know?
Yeah, he might have his own.
All right, let me bring back on Chen then, see his afterthoughts on him. Chen, who, by the way, is one of the heroes of the, you know, of what's been in the fight against EJ, you know. Hey, Chen.
How's it going, guys? Yeah, I was just sitting here listening to you. I think, is this the most amount of callers we've ever had in? I don't know. I haven't listened to too many of them, but we've got quite a few here.
It probably is one of the bigger ones, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and most of them are lizards.
Hey, Rodan, what are we going to do if
if we get a troll caller, you want to boot them off? Or you want to play with?
No, play with them. No, Savage, you there?
Yeah.
No, let him go because now that Andrew's gone, gone off to bigger and better things like dinner, they can call in all they want and let Michelle bat him away.
Hey, remember the angry Jew? Remember that guy?
The what?
The what?
Remember the angry Jew?
Oh yeah.
Oh, the guy from the 9/11 trooper. Yeah.
Hey, somebody's got their speakers on. There's an echo here.
I think it's Chen.
Yeah, I blamed him too. Yeah.
Well, who was that guy we had, that John in Philadelphia one time?
Oh, the one who was saying Mayor Rizzo should run for president or something. Or he called twice, John from Philadelphia. Joe from Philadelphia, that was his name.
Yeah, talking points. You're just spouting the talking points. And then you always want to ask them, what talking points would that be? They can't name it. They've got their little sheet in front of them that they're supposed to say.
If you shut it down by saying, oh, that's just talking points, it doesn't mean that the talking points are wrong.
Yeah.
It's just saying, that's just garbage.
We're in agreement.
Yeah.
Well, hey, look, hey, kids, we got a guy who's been waiting for quite a while. He's kind of like a legend around. I'm going to bring him on right now. Hello, right to the point.
Hey, Savage, how you doing?
All right, how are you? I know you've been out for 25 minutes on hold.
That doesn't matter.
Did you like the show?
Yeah, it was good, but I think it could have been better.
Hey, boot him, Savage.
No, not yet.
Guys,
you can't say that. This is awesome.
Now you got to
give RQP a salad.
Be smart.
It's like mopping a floor, and all of a sudden, hey, here he comes. You missed a spot. You know, I mean, come on.
Now, listen, you had a guy that's very smart, very tied in, and you didn't touch on any of the big issues of the day, like Fast and Furious, Solyndra, and other things that
everything.
He knows about.
Well, we couldn't cover everything, but just the fact he showed up was awesome.
No, but I'm just saying, to do a show with him all doing CFNJ, that is... You know, we had that chance to get such a person that has such a high profile and to not touch on the other ones.
No, you're missing the point. This was his
choice.
That's
what he called in.
That's why he agreed to it. There's some other background stuff going on. And
hey,
it has to do about Charles Johnson. But the fact that he went off and started talking about other things, I mean, that's just a bonus. So
I'm just saying... It would have been better to me if you had heard his commentary on some of the really important issues of the day rather than
But he's already got a forum for that. All he has to do is call up CNN or Fox News and he's there. This was a forum for his own personal vendetta or whatever he wanted to say about Charles Johnson. And if anything else was on his mind that he wanted to talk about, hey, we're not going to tell him no. That's how it came
about. Right to the point. That was the reason he wanted an interview with us, because he wanted to get it off his chest.
That's fine.
So that's what happened. It wasn't necessarily an interview of Breitbart per se, because trust me, if he had stayed on another 40 minutes, I did have other questions lined up, but he particularly called to because he's in right now in a war with Charles, so he basically called just to get his view out. So that's what happened.
Well, the other thing is that he couldn't call into CNN and say, hey, I want to talk about Charles Johnson. That's where the forum came from. Anyway, I'll quit interrupting and you can go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. You know, you're not gonna bring up Charles on some major news network. That's not going to happen. I agree with that 100,000%. I mean, even though he had one appearance somewhere one night, and they asked him what LGF meant, and he couldn't even tell them.
Well, right to the point, let me ask you a big question, because you follow this stuff. Is Vance Jones behind a lot of these incidents going on, like, what do you call it? For example, like Occupy Wall Street, he's obviously has his hands in that. He's threatening a October progressive offensive. What's going on here?
I'll tell you exactly what's going on here. Van Jones is integral to this. There's no doubt he is right there. And I'll tell you who is the real person behind it. And you don't want to, you know, it's the usual suspect. You don't have to fucking guess too hard. It's Soros.
Oh, yeah.
Let me bring on Osprey real quick. Osprey.
Yes. Occupy Wall Street. The all offensive, whatever you want to call it. It is Soros' game to play, to sit out there and, you know, put everything that they want to do right up front, wrong about. But they just think everybody will buy into it.
Right, right. Well, here's what's funny. Oscar, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I hear you. Just everybody, just to let everybody know. About a month ago, Oscar wrote something on hold on a second. I got to connect. Hold on a second. Oscar wrote something very interesting. We all know the phenomenon of the flash mob, something that the media has been covering up. Osprey, your theory was that Van Jones might have been behind that, correct?
Yeah, and I don't necessarily mean that he was behind it and that he was twittering to every flash mob
right
in Philadelphia or Minneapolis wherever else the flash mobs were occurring. I can't remember now the name of it, one of the other towns, but the thing about it is that Van Jones's background has always been in kind of the cutting edge of left-wing activism and technology. In the 1990s, after the Rodney King episode, he started a group in the Bay Area called Bay Area Cop Watch. And this was right around the time when digital video cameras started to get inexpensive and easily available to people.
Well,
and his
Cop
group
was
going
Van
around.
That
yes,
was Van Jones?
Yes.
I remember Cop
that
Watch.
That was Van
yeah
Jones.
I remember yes it, yes.
So they were following the cops around with cameras, trying to catch them in the act of doing something brutal or racist, right? And so I just kind of thought, well, you know, that's kind of where he came from. You know, maybe he's made some suggestions to people here and there that, you know, that they use social media and cell phones and smartphones and so forth to organize these quote-unquote spontaneous demonstrations.
Yeah, and honestly, what's amazing is you said this theory a month ago. Now it's turning out Van Jones is involved in all these other things. So it is possible that those flash mobs was just a trial run for the big one that they have planned. You know, now with Occupy Wall Street and things of that nature, and Van Jones is behind that. So you were not far off, my friend.
It actually very well be. And, you know, like I say, I mean, I was living in the Bay Area at that time, and I was involved in, you know, in the computer industry. And, you know, it was very interesting to me, the whole evolution of things, because when I first moved to the Silicon Valley in the late 1980s, you know, it was the tail end of the Reagan era. There were still a fair amount of conservative people there. There was a lot of military contracting going on
mm-hmm
and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And gradually over time, over about the span of about I would say 10 years or so, it was almost imperceptible. The whole tenor of the place changed. And when the dot-com boom came in, you had all of these kids coming out of the universities who had been marinated in this sort of leftist broth, if you will, during their university years, and you had the mixture of the whole Silicon Valley computer milieu with kind of the traditional Bay Area leftist radicalism from the 60s and the 70s kind of merging and merging together. And I, you know, I used to tell people when I moved to the Bay Area in the late 80s, I was the only liberal in an office full of conservatives, and by the time I left, I was the only conservative in an office full of liberals.
Now, let me interject something here. There's a lot of sense being made with this connection to Van Jones and the flash mobs. When you take into context Van's wanting to bring an Arab Spring type thing here to America. You know your history, if you know your history of the flash mob, the flash mob actually originated in Iran as a way for protesters to get together that were protesting I'm a nut job. So,
They were using text messaging on cell phones. Mm-hmm.
Right, which is the impetus of the flash mob. That's where the whole flash mob thing came from. So Van Jones being wanting to bring the Arab Spring here, it makes a lot of sense that the first step to bringing the Arab Spring here is to bring the flash mob here.
And the whole thing is always watch out for that term, popular uprising. Oscar, you're a student of the Cold War. You know the term popular uprising. Always used for they always like, it's a popular uprising, and it's a manufactured revolt.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you always end up with the Crash Wall Street guys or whatever being mostly dupes, cannon fodder, as it were, who are thrown in the streets. They're confused, they're misguided, and they're...
Hello?
Yeah, sorry, I had to answer my door.
Oh.
But you know what I'm saying? You got all these kids that are there, they've been brainwashed, indoctrinated basically into Marxism. They've lived an incredibly affluent life. Somebody was I think it was Mike C was saying the other day that somebody over at GCP had taken a picture of the Wall Street kids and put a bunch of boxes over them with arrows pointing to the large corporate things they had, you know, the iPhones.
Exactly. They had that picture at Weasel Zippers. There was a guy there, and he had, like, the $3,000 mountain bike and a laptop computer and a smartphone. I don't know whether it was an iPhone or an Android phone, but it was some kind of touchscreen smartphone. And here they all are, you know, rallying to the defeat of the capitalist system. Yeah. I mean,
right, which, without it, they couldn't rally.
Exactly.
You know, it's kind of a mind-numbing stupidity that just really makes you go, "Duh."
And exasperating.
You know, I wrote a post a long time ago called The Awful Truth on my blog, and it was about the Green Movement. You know, they want to go back to an agrarian society. Well, hey, newsflash, the average life expectancy in the agrarian society was 35 to 40 years.
Mm, 35 to 40 years, yep.
Okay. Under an agrarian society, probably two-thirds of the world's population would die. All these green enviro-Nazis want to go back to that, but they're never the ones who are willing to be the one who dies.
And no,
they
Dorian.
Just want somebody else in another country to die.
Dorian, what they plan on doing on a global scale is Pol Pot's Cambodia. Pol Pot was the ultimate green regime, if you think about it. It was.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was the ultimate green machine. It was. What is the perfect green society? Cambodia under Pol Pot. Straight up, that is their model.
Absolutely.
And they seek to do it on a global basis. And right to the point. Is Van Jones really high up there in the hierarchy of the left, or he's just a useful tool?
Oh, no, he's up there.
I would say he's up there, too.
Another site that I don't like to, you know, emphasize too much because I know they're a pivot point for the Democrat, you know, even though Hillary wants to talk about the, you know, vast right-wing conspiracy, there's another one on the left that really is not, you know, because their whole thing is the whole vast left wing coming at us with death by 1,000 paper cuts. But the one site that he is attached to very closely is called Demos, D-E-M-O-S. And
Demos.com?
Yeah. He is a Soros toad. And, you know, I know him because I have met Van Jones. I have met Soros when I used to go to Davos. And believe me, there's no way that child could get into the good graces of Davos because he doesn't have the money to get there. He's got the agenda. That's the only way he could get in. He was brought there as a player who could extend their ends. And I'll tell you where it all goes back to. And it goes back to a combination of George Soros and Maurice Strong with Agenda 21.
Yeah, Agenda 21 is the genesis.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the whole game plan here. You sit down and read Agenda 21, and you have the game plan.
It's scary.
Where they're going. Global warming is just a scam, and they just that is the thing to move and grease the wheels to make Agenda 21 work.
Yeah,
I mean, the first thing they should have told you, just how far up the ladder in the organization Van Jones is, the fact that Obama tried to tap him. Okay, that right there should tell you something.
Without a confirmation,
somebody had to tell Obama.
No, the story's out.
Bring this guy up.
Jarrett recruited Van Jones to come into the White House. That's bullshit. Total fucking bullshit. Soros put him there.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that. Like I said, somebody had to tell Obama to do it. Because community organizer from the Bay Area, the country's too damn big for you to just pick one little person out of, you know what I'm saying? There, how many cities are in America?
Now, that's the reason I'm saying, what didn't happen that way, they just tried to pawn it off as being what they did.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
Total crap shootout here. Soros is coming on big time, throwing all the money at this and saying, we got to take this country down. It's just
he's been trying for years to buy a president.
Yep.
He's been trying for years. You know, he tried with Kerry, Gore, Kerry, and now, but he finally bought one with Obama.
You guys want to hear some ominous words from Glenn Beck? When Van Jones was forced to resign because it was proven he was involved with the 9/11 Truther movement, Glenn Beck said that Van Jones is going to be more powerful outside of the White House than in. He was right.
Guess where he's at now?
He was right. Beck was right. Van Jones is way more powerful now than when he was Greens are.
Well, look where he went after he left the White House.
Yeah, Center for American Progress.
Yeah, Podesta's place. This
mm-hmm.
is all, you tie this all together, Rodan, when you start looking at all the things that are going on, not just in isolation, but you look at Center for American Progress is one of the pivotal points. But you look at all, for example, the donors, bundlers of the Green Jobs Movement, like Solyndra, with Kaiser, all these other people. And they just pushed out $4.5 billion worth of other loans in the last week. All that's going to do is going to be a slush fund to push money that are going to go to, Obama, his $1 billion he wants to have fun this time.
Well,
it's
here's
not
the whole thing.
Hard complex here. Don't move in the same circles I do.
Here's something interesting that Andrew Breitbart
opened the door.
What? Right to the point. What's very, very interesting is that there's no equivalent on the right to the network the left has in terms of funding. He said it. It's basically you're on your own on the right.
That's pretty much true. The thing is like Andrew said himself, we play by Marcus of Queensberry rules. We go by the good guys' rules.
Yeah.
Now, if I were to do anything right now, if I wish I could just come out and do it, it would be write an open letter to Democrats, the classic Democrats, and say, please, people, throw the progressives out of your party. Come back, your own party, and then we can discuss, like adults, accommodations to where we want to make America go forward.
All right, everybody, listen, we have a, quote, troll, so I'm going to mute everybody because we're going to let this guy have his say. Savage, you ready?
I am ready.
All right, we got everyone is muted.
We got the anonymous troll. Hello, anonymous troll. How you doing?
Anonymous troll, and I spend all day and night over at Little Green Footballs reading every word that Charles and everybody else says.
My friend, how you doing?
Sorry?
This is Internet Septic Tank Engineer.
No, that's not me. That's somebody else that sounds exactly like me that spends a lot of time there.
Well, how you doing anyway? How's everything going?
I was just calling in to ask you, are you hungry yet, Rodan? You haven't eaten, have you?
Yeah, I was just eating chicken wings.
You've got some chicken wings. Oh, okay. We were quite worried about you, actually. Yeah, when...
I was drinking this beer. It's called Singha. It's from Thailand. It's pretty good, and I was having some Cajun wings.
Okay. So the beer was on sale, was it?
Yeah, actually, it was. It was on sale last night. Yes, it was, sir.
Enough. After my own heart. Anybody got any questions?
Yeah, I have heard a little rumor that you might be putting together the story for Big Journalism.
No, that's not me. I'm providing any information. Anybody wants to email and request stuff, we can provide the information, but as to writing things, I'm not very good. Sorry.
Well, anyway, because, isn't it amazing? Because someone who's documented Charles, how does he do with a straight face accuse Breitbart of people of stuff he's done as an own block? For example, Gus Ado, too, with his comments, Ludwig with his comments, and then he says, look at these people. They're making nasty comments. I mean, does he read his own blog?
He can't do, to be honest. He's a lot of time we spend looking at stuff from the early days. We go back as far as 2001, as you know. And tonight, because Gus disappeared, I had a look at some of the first things that Gus was saying, and even commenters have done 180. And it's odd. It's odd to see. A while ago, what I did was something perhaps stupid. New people that joined DOD, I posted their first and last comments, and I only did it twice. And people did actually change between enrolling there the first time and getting thrown out on their ear at the end. So we all did change while we were over there. And I changed about 23 times, the number of times I've been across there.
Yes, and my big question is, in one sense, tell me I'm not correct in this sense. Hold on a second. Charles, for example, he makes the statement he never changed. He technically is... Go ahead.
He did change. If actually, there's a file in circulation. I think it's about 6.9 megabytes, and it's around... it's a zip file, and it's everything Charles ever... said at Little Green Footballs, and you read the beginning of that and read the end of it, and yeah, he did. He definitely changed.
Well, this is what I mean, in the sense that what has changed is his targets, but his posts are relatively the same. You know, if you go to 2005, the enemy was Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Muslim Brotherhood. Fast forward to 2011, now it's the Catholic Church, Breitbart, the EDL, a Nazis. You see what I'm saying? In the sense that you could take a 2005 post and change the title
from
Muslim Brotherhood to Catholic Church, and it's the same post, basically.
There's actually he didn't used to allow conversation on abortion, and I know it's a controversial subject, so that's why we're probably not covering it to DOD. But he explicitly stated that he didn't want any conversations of that sort because it divided people and it was a contentious issue. And now that seems to be... one of the things he's using to get rid of people, really, cause contention, same as intelligent design. That wasn't spoken of.
Right. Are you willing to take a question from one of the callers?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, so let's start off with Dorian, who you're very familiar with. Hi, Dorian. This is Internet Septic Tank Engineer. Do you have a question for him?
I just wanted to... say hello.
Hi there.
I don't know that I really have a question. I'm in awe of your correlating abilities, your data mining. The work you do is it's
impressive almost to the point of being frightening, to tell
you
the truth.
No, actually, I'll let you guys...
I hope that I never get you mad at me.
No, I'll let you guys into a really, really big secret. If you want to save a web page, you go up to the menu, and it's like File and Save As, and you can save a complete web page. And you do that 38,000 times, and you've got little green footballs. And that's exactly how it happened. It took over 3 weeks to do the first time.
Yeah, I have a program called Web Spider that'll do that.
Got little spider now, didn't I?
All right, Dorian, I'm going to put you back on mute. Let me bring on Carolina Girl. Carolina Girl, I figured you would have a question or a comment for the infamous Internet Septic Tank Engineer, one of the Boiler Room Crew dudes.
I am not worthy. Actually, I'm Arachne over at DOD. I think that's no secret to anybody. And I want to tell you that you and Chen Zhen are my heroes over there, and I have your coffee cup.
Oh, thank you.
And I drink from it every day. You guys are amazing. I think that the data mining you do and exposing him for what he really is just incredible. And I know you guys take a lot of heat for it when the trolls come over.
Yeah.
And you do the dirty work for us, and thanks so much.
No problem.
I'm actually a good decoy. Half the time they want to argue with me about Serbia or something.
That's okay. I'm a night school law student, didn't you know? It was news to me.
Right into that subject gang engineer, they just have this visceral hatred of me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm a boogeyman to them. You know, I've done nothing. All I've done is I just copy and paste their own comments. That's all.
That's all I do. You're asking me to write an article. I said, no way. I'm cut and paste stuff. But anyway, I'll let you guys get back to it because you've only got 5 minutes left. All right?
All right, Internet Septic Tank Engineer. It was a pleasure, as always, talking to you. Keep up the good work. And
You know where to find us if you need us, okay?
Absolutely, my friend. Take care, man.
Bye, then.
Yeah, well, Carolina Girl, that's one of the, Boiler Room people.
Oh, I love the Boiler Room crew. I love the cup because it looks like you got four pictures of Bill Spector on it. I don't know, it's a great cup.
Carolina Girl, it just amazes me, how, what Breitbart's comments today, I think, were very telling. All these people on the right, like Breitbart, Hot Air, us, people like that, there's no big source funding us. But with the left, it's a network. And it's like Breitbart
says,
it's coming out of their own pockets.
Well, look at AOL paid $300 million for the Huffington Post. And it's incredible. You look at Free Republic, which is financed strictly by its members to the tune of close to $500,000 a year. But it's all done by the people who work there, and not the people who work there, but the people who comment there. And look at Chuck can't even get people, what was he up to, $60 a month in his monthly subscription? Whereas, in the old days, if he said he had the tip jar, we did. And much to Em's detriment, she, tried to help him out, and look what he did to her, which is just, amazing. He can be a despicable human being. I have to say, I was very surprised when Andy was talking about Charles, because I thought, I didn't realize that he was going to be so willing to talk about that,
Yeah, well, that's
Carolina, we got 40 seconds left. You want to extend the show out or call it a day?
Yeah, we're done, man. The 10th top of the hour. Okay. But Savage, though, your final thoughts on what transpired today?
Well, we're getting bigger and bigger and better and better. Look at the quality of hosts we have, guests coming in. Everybody keep up the good work. We'll be back in probably a week or maybe 2 weeks.
But thanks, everybody, for calling in, and thank you, Mr. Breitbart, for coming in. I do appreciate that. We got to go. Good night.